So this period of time is a period of the Dharma inquiry. Rather briefly, just give the reminders. So anyone who wishes is very welcome to come and take the seat here. Maybe over the day that we've been here together, from experiences, from instructions and talks, and much else, questions or areas of experience that you might like to share are very, very welcome. And some dialogue inquiry gets underway with the intention as a contribution towards some insights, some fresh ways of viewing and looking at things, which might be helpful and beneficial for each and every one of us. So sometimes the voice of the good person who kindly comes up to take the seat actually is a voice which might be speaking on behalf of quite a lot of us. Anytime the person or myself can say thank you to bring it to a close. With the thank you, the person returns to his or her seat, silent minute or two together, meditation, reflection, and then another invitation is extended. And so we flow, in fact, between the communications, flow back into the silence for a minute or two, then back into the communications. Remembering as well, of course, the fullness and the great value in life of human beings really learning to listen to each other. And the two great important aspects of human existence. One is to be loved and the other is to be understood. And these two are the two greatest priorities in human life. So sitting and the inquiry time here, hopefully, is a contribution in that direction. So yesterday, we had one gender, and we know which gender. So, and just to add in the small defense of my gender here, that I would add here and elsewhere, that sometimes it might be three of the other gender, three women would come up first on the first evening. That is just as common. So just to give a small reminder so there isn't any judging going on the poor male. So a woman wishes to come and take the seat here, you're of course very welcome. Just with the recording, as usual, to check and if it's okay with you, if a yes or no, it's absolutely fine.
No, no problem. I would like to ask about interactions with other people.
Yes, please.
During the Vipassana, it's working. So there are many ways to communicate with people.
Yeah. Sorry, just want to make the microphone a little higher so I don't have to go to the slump.
So okay. There are many ways to communicate, not only words. And I was curious what, in your opinion, is the best way to be around people. Like, one could completely ignore the fact that there are other human beings.
You could be polite.
Mm-hmm. You could, catch eyes and smile. You could find other ways to interact. Mm-hmm. And I find myself in different situations. Sometimes I want to disconnect, and sometimes I really want to connect. And I'm not so sure what's better for me and what's supportive of my process. And especially when I see someone in pain or in difficulty, I have the need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But also I know that there is something powerful for them with.
So I'll just give here the general overview, and this might be helpful. So that the primary emphasis, of course, is on the silence. The silence is the act of love for other people by not trying to communicate with them, not entering, so to speak, into their space there. And that silence gives each and every one of us an opportunity, as much as possible, to be really with ourselves. And so the respect for the silence here is the expression of love and kindness. There may be, of course, as you point out, just at the end there, sometimes there might be the seeing that someone is really going through a hard time. And there are certainly plenty of tears. There are very critical life issues which are taking place every day for people here, and major events in people's life. Sometimes a person may see that and may wish to go and contact or speak or touch or whatever. It may not be what the person wishes. If one genuinely has a real concern, then do about somebody else, please either find me out, a manager, and speak, or come to one of the three teachers and let us know, because that's our work and that's what we're here for. With the communication, sometimes there is spontaneously the eye contact. I know in some other traditions, Buddhist traditions and others, there is a discipline of not having eye contact. That rule doesn't apply here. But the guideline is not to look for it, not to pursue it, not to try and get somebody's attention with the eyes. They might just start doing the same, and then both people get out of touch, or another person doesn't want, only sees it as a kind of pressure, and again, it wouldn't be helpful for the person. So primarily, one's experience with oneself, the respect for the silence, the appreciation for the sangha, the collective, exploring, looking into issues, and as people are with the small groups, with Sandy and Iran and myself, you know, of course then there is eye contact. There is really listening, and as takes place as well, letting us as the teachers ask the questions, respond to the answers. So it's a kind of series in a way of one-to-ones that is taking place. And keeps those kind of themes in life while here. It kind of really gives support to everybody, to you and to all the others. And your good question there is a fairly common kind of question for people who are rather new to retreats. So it's just helpful at this point to give others a reminder as well. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Just have the quiet minute and then another invitation. Yes, anyone, anytime. With the recording?
Yeah, fine. I have a question about the physical pain.
The physical pain, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you hear over there?
Okay. If there's pain that returns in, well, I have a pain.
Yes.
I have pain that returns in one specific place.
Yes.
It can change, but it returns all the time.
Mm.
Now, my question is, will it sustain? Will it get stronger if I notice it? And the second question is, in the future, is it a possibility there will be no physical pain whatsoever?
Yes, it's called death. So, we'll take the first question first. If I may ask, you don't have to say. Where is the location for the pain that keeps coming back?
On my leg.
And where on the leg?
In the
thigh muscle.
Exactly.
Is the pain which is arising in the thigh muscle confined to one posture, like sitting, obviously? Or
no.
And what's the length of time? Is it just a retreat or just in general that there has been a regular return?
Only when I pay attention to it, it will return and I will notice it. Like, it's not when I walk, like if I'm not here, but daily I don't have that.
No.
No. But when I go to bed or when I do meditation or when I have the time to pay attention to this area.
So the pain then isn't so demanding that it's forcing its way into your attention, that it sounds like when I go to bed, when I sit, when my attention goes there, then I'm aware of it. So the pain is not invasive as such.
No, not daily.
No. It isn't easy to know what the contributing factors are between one specific location and the attention. It may be something quite simple. There is a little extra vulnerability in this area. Every human body has its weak places and points, everyone without exception. And sometimes with the power of attention and with sometimes also medical knowledge or with experience, we just get to know a bit more clearly where the weak place or points are. It may just be, it sounds like it for yourself, it's just landing here. When it lands there with some regularity, as mentioned a night or two ago, the thought then generates the future. So your two questions, can you remember your two questions?
Yeah, you answered the second one.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the first one question was? What?
We can see the recording.
The question, as I recall, will it go away and how long will it continue? The notion of continuity is just full of speculation. It's a speculation, and the speculation doesn't help because the experiences, in this case, it is coming and going.
Yeah.
And it's coming and going because the attention is mostly moving in that area. You could be the Buddha of the Buddhas and still experience what you experience in the leg. So that physical phenomena, that actually strong sensation, the pain has a makes a strong impact, unwelcome, uninvited, and it impacts and it demands attention. Strong sensation doesn't have that potency, but as I say, it may just be standing out a little bit more in one location. Mm-hmm. And if one is just recognizing the periods of time of presence and absence, presence and absence, presence and absence, it hopefully will reduce the questioning, and does all physical pain go away, and all of those. Have you taken any opportunity while here to ask if there's something to be seen or understood, or from it? You know, she kind of just put your attention there, and then you follow up with a question.
Yeah.
And any response from your inner life?
The response that I got, that it's connected to maybe how I eat.
How you eat?
Yeah, you know.
Interesting. Yeah. Why not?
Paying attention and doing it fast and
all right.
not relaxing enough and eating too much.
All right. Okay. Nice. So.
I'm still checking.
Yeah.
I'm not doing nothing about eating, but.
The attention goes there, and all credit to you. You raise the question, and then it brings a response. It doesn't matter at all whether the response seems obviously connected or not so obvious. This would be a not so, generally speaking, not so obvious. And the first thing that comes out of the mouth was eating too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, which affects the cells. What's the movement in the inner life that brings you to eating too quickly? What's going on about eating too quickly?
Not having enough patience.
Patience with what? Food, you, life?
No, patience, time, just somehow just being always in a hurry. Well, not always, especially in food, or maybe the scares of it, to be afraid that it won't be around, I don't know.
So if the not knowing is, it shows the absence of clarity. One doesn't know, so one's not clear. So the practice then, in this case, and you've got three times a day, 7:30, 12:30, 5:30. That those times in the other hall, which are often more popular than in this one, is to really make those times a real practice. Apart from the what we eat, and here of course it's a genuinely good, healthy and nourishing diet.
The amount.
But so a few factors with eating for it to be healthy and nourishing. One is what we eat, well, we know that's fine here. Then definitely there is the amount. So when the first plate is empty, that can be the moment. The clarity, is it just a habit for the extra which is not needed, or is it there's still plenty of space inside because one is checking, that's the criteria, and then one might or might not take some more there, and one should always leave space in the stomach for some for the food to digest more easily, and of course not doing any exercise for at least 2 or 3 hours. But equally important, and we had lots of teachings in this in the monastery, exactly as you said, of mindfulness of eating. It's not only eating more slowly, because that places less pressure on the body, but also and equally chewing the food well. And if the food is chewed well, quite consciously, that's why we've got these things in here, some of us are losing some, but nevertheless there's still enough around, that will convert the substance almost to liquid for the swallowing. And the flow from substance to liquid will obviously digest more easily, and it will contribute to the flow of health as well.
I know all those things.
You know, but your head's going the wrong direction. I know.
I know, but I don't do it.
All right. So what will encourage you? What? Because there's a relationship to life, and you say, oh, I know, I've heard it all before, but I don't do it. It's rather sad, isn't it, not to eat food mindfully, respectfully, sensitively, appreciatively, and to chew it well, and to feel all the taste buds, and to swallow it. I mean, you know, your mouth, you know, it isn't a car shoving a petrol tube down it, is it? You've got all these incredible taste buds. Yeah. So what would encourage say? I'm going to have a really caring, thoughtful, respectful relationship to food from the time the first fork or spoon of it goes into my mouth.
My body, when it hurts, it encourages me. We're back to the first
one. All right. So if that's the case, may your body hurt more.
Yeah, I know. That's what
if that's the only thing that's going to do it, but I'm sure there's got to be an easy way than having pains in the body.
Just to remember doing it.
I missed the word.
I said just remembering doing
right.
it.
Right. The word mindfulness, by the way, in this Pali word, it carries with it, I was speaking to one of the yogis here today, mindfulness, being in the present moment,
yeah.
And the same word carries with it, remembering to. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness of remembering to. So the remembering to.
And finding ways to enjoy it.
Well, one doesn't enjoy eating food like shoveling dirt into a hole. So the actual enjoyment, the joy of it is for health, for well-being, for happiness, for good flow.
No.
So could you remember either when you're walking to the table, right, here as a practice, or when your hand touches the instrument, fork, spoon, or whatever you're using, as soon as your hand, let's say, touches the metal, aha, right. There's some really focused, dedicated practices at this time.
It can start even before, just by looking at food and smelling it.
Yeah. You please feel free to put your nose as near to your brain as you wish. Anything to help get conscious and stay awake when eating.
Thank you.
Okay. That's for it. Thank you. Alright, you can put the. Thank you.
I have a question. When
it's at the silent period for some meditation and reflection, and just for listening. Yes, anyone, please?
I have also two questions.
Please, yes.
After the retreat is finished and we shall go home, do you suggest us as a way of life to have a retreat of one day in a week to clean ourselves as a habit?
The suggestion is here that you have no future. I'm serious. So we'll look after one day at a time. We'll take care of one day at a time. On the final morning, the teachers will speak about the daily life. Another question?
Yes. In 2 weeks, there is a
new... Did anybody tell you that there is a present moment?
Yes.
So what's happening in the today, in the present for you, apart from thinking about something that's not available? What's happening to today for you, if you wish to say? Much more interesting.
You know, when I'm here and I clean myself by almost all time to be quiet. So,
yes.
The question is, what's the presence of the retreat to me?
Yes.
I'm in the present, but what is the presence? More presence. I like presence. So.
Just a minute, because of the English. Presence, P-R-E-S-E-N-T-E, or P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S. I'm not quite sure which one you're
calling. It's the same.
It's the same.
This is the present.
All right.
You know, the Hebrew year is becoming in 2 weeks.
You love the future. I can get you.
I can isolate it.
For a moment, we were in the present.
This is my present to the new year, to come here.
Right, so here is the present. And with the present moment, present. There are lots of, I don't use the word presents, but lots of gifts that are taking place. Gifts of kindness, the gifts of love, the gifts of silence, the gifts of support, the gifts of teaching, the gifts of service from the managers and the team and the crew. There's a huge amount of gifts, presents, being offered to all of us without exception. And it's beautiful to be able to recognize those. And we, in our own small way, whether it's cutting the vegetables or doing the cleaning or being moderate with the food or whatever, is also gifts, presents, gifts which are being given.
So a big present I have in the kitchen, mm-hmm. thanks to Daniela.
Daniela, yes.
You know, I found myself, this is a big present, that in my house, I run away from washing the dishes.
Mm.
I can't stand it to my partner, mm. to my children, not to myself. Mm. And here, I found myself very, very pleasant to wash the big, the big serim.
For those of us like me who live alone, it would be a bit of a crisis if we ran away from always washing the dishes. Anyway, so sometimes there with the good support of our kitchen manager and her good love and support there, touches and inspires. And then, as you say, the whole feeling response to being in the kitchen, dishes, or whatever, all of that gives another feeling instead of avoiding and leaving it to the poor members of your family. The action, because the feeling has changed, the movement towards changes. That's the fact and the actuality there. In what other ways Can that also show itself for you here? Went in the kitchen. I don't usually like washing the dishes. Communication with Danielle. Warmth, happiness, the joy there. Has that occurred anywhere else over the days? Something that normally you might avoid or not want to do or keep away from. Actually, the inner is changing and there's a loving or happy response. Good question. Anything? You gave one example, kitchen. I want one or two more, if you can.
Yes, I like to walk a lot, but I walk very fast. And here, I like to walk slowly.
All right.
Yes.
It's a little bit like with the good lady and her connection with food. So sometimes we get used to fast.
I like to see, you know, here the Nemalim nuts.
Yes.
And I didn't know that they are walking very fast.
Especially if somebody like you is around, who's a fast walker, also want to get away. So sometimes we slow down, and one aspect which is lovely about it, in the slowing down, is actually we see more, we taste more, we notice more. There are times to walk fast. Times maybe to eat fast. There's something really urgent and we have to address it, whatever. But if the general sense is the slowing down, when there is opportunity, and there's always opportunity for it, we will notice more, we'll connect more. And the creatures of the earth, we'll see them too. So that change, you know, is part of human being connecting with herself, himself, and with what's around. And teaching the practices here to really cultivate that. And when that's really cultivated, then the thought will arise next week. What's that? 2 weeks' time? Gosh, there's so much to explore today. And then the little thought about the future. Little. All right? No?
Thank you.
Yes, anyone, anytime. Yes, I've come. I won't tease you about if you've had a gender operation during the day. As you wish.
Can I ask a question?
No. It's the silent time and it's the quiet invitation. And then I'll give a short reflection afterwards. And if there's still questions, then tomorrow, find one of those two. We'll find one of those.
Oh. funny. I always wanted to come here and I feel so much fear. It's a bit intimidating to speak to a big audience somehow. I have a lot of struggle inside of me, and you really struck a chord yesterday during the group discussion. And when you said what your teacher told you, that he sent you back, you know, to ponder upon your religion before giving you the opportunity to be ordained. And another thing that struck me yesterday is that you mentioned that you're not a Buddhist. And I was really helpless because I thought you are the symbol of, I don't know, the person a Buddhist teacher.
No, thank you. Carry on.
I personally experienced for the past few years, how do you say that, as if the rug was pulled under my feet, because I used to be very devoted Buddhist. It's been my whole life. And I was about to be ordained, literally ordained, and then somebody pulled the rug and shaken my whole point of view.
Can you, the important point here, and I'll touch upon a couple of other things you said. I'm curious, who was the person, and in what way did she or he pull the rug out, if you wish to say?
I spoke to you about it with you many years ago.
I think I mentioned it a few years ago,
but it was my Tibetan master.
Your Tibetan master.
One of them had many.
One of the Tibetan masters. So, what did the Tibetan master say?
Basically, I was about to put the robes and go on a retreat, meditation retreat.
3 years?
Yes.
It was to ordain and go on a 3-year meditation retreat. Go on.
And I also left behind all my responsibilities in my career because I didn't want to have anything to do with them. I was a total samsaric failure anyway, so I didn't want to carry on, you know, having career in samsara or normal life. And he basically told me after all these years that I spent living there that everything is a manifestation of enlightenment and that it's just a fantasy and that I should come back to the West.
So what did he say?
I can't really say the words, but in a way he expected me to leave all this tradition which I loved so much and all the pujas and the monks and it did break my concept in a very profound way, and it shook me, it still is, because it took my life away.
The tradition has a real edge to it.
What do you mean by
an
edge?
An edge, to be edgy.
I mean, do you mean the positive aspect of
it? Yes, insofar as religion is quite often interested in converts.
Yeah, that's true.
And the hardcore teachers in the tradition have absolutely no interest in converting people. Just do
no
not
interest to
convert anybody.
Yeah, that's what my master claims, it's true. He doesn't want to convert
anyone. No, there is no wish to add another kind of identity called I am a Buddhist or I am a Buddhist nun or whatever. That the inquiry is ruthless.
Mm-hmm.
It cuts. The young man comes to the master and says, I want to become a Buddhist monk. I want to leave my, I didn't actually have a religion, and I left it anyway, but I want to leave my past behind, and I want to take this on. No interest. Dismissed. Etc. No, that would be lovely, that would be nice, yes, it's a good religion. No, get out of here. In order to see what the conviction is like, what the motivation is, the key concept. So in the duality of ordination, 3 years retreat, and the Western world, deep teachers are not really concerned about one over the other. So you can go, you can spend days, weeks, months, years preparing or becoming a nun, and then, in, as you say, the rug is pulled out, the life is pulled out, and he sends you off. Sounds like a good master to me.
The problem is, part of me is experiencing now the wisdom in all traditions. You know, I can go on a Sufi dance and experience very profound states of mind, of deep presence, and all kinds of sakha dancing. And I can all of a sudden see a very profoundity, you know, that does exist in Judaism. But the problem is that I feel now as if an innermost part of me has been taken away. And that I can't really wholeheartedly now commit myself to any spiritual path. And sometimes you do need it to go more deeply.
You do.
And I feel like, you know, so okay, so everything is unfulfillment. So this weekend I'm going to go to a tantric festival, next week I'm just going to go to a Sufi festival, next, you know, I'm going to do Vipassana. But then what's hard for me is that I feel part of my inner being is being, I don't know, ripped off.
Genuinely, it is not easy. And that, as you say, which has given you, you know, support, and you've committed a lot of love and time and practice too, and then comes the voice with the edge, the cut there. In the follow-up to it, that means what you were just speaking just now, the world and the picture story and the imagery, you know, from dance to serious meditations to Sufi world to just being present, all of that, that's nothing to do with the essence. These are, again, like religion or whatever, they are presentations. You've got to keep with the essence, the heart of it. And it's about liberation. If you move away from the central interest in what it is to be a truly liberated human being, if you move away from that, you will experience exactly what you're describing. Which means a push outwardly. Oh, I could do this, I could do that, I feel I've lost something, maybe I can gain something. And the world of gaining and losing, having and not having, that is not easy, but that feeling and thought begins to have quite a strong impact of having and not having. It's got nothing to do with liberation, though.
That's true, but one thing that I really struggle about is, does religion has, you know, an important contributing factor? Because on the one hand, I can see religions that cause, you know, some of the biggest wars on the planet because people are so attached to their views. On the other hand, you can see that religions, you know, have produced amazing beings, like, you know, Saint Francis of Assisi, is always the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa, so, and they were usually also part of traditions and religions. Yeah. Not all of them just kicked it out, you know?
So how can you find, I feel like
I don't belong anywhere now.
So, unless they go slowly with this, insofar as the attention leaning outwardly and recognizing and acknowledging the duality, in this case religion, it has a lot to offer and it's caused a lot of problems on this earth. That's the duality. That duality, it keeps leaning out, is giving too much authority to religion. It could be said, regardless of what the Tibetan Lama says, or regardless of Christopher speaking in a small group and saying, I am not a Buddhist, It could be you're giving too much authority to us. And in that giving too much authority to us, you are then correspondingly, to the same degree, taking it away from yourself. So if at the current time, inwardly, the response with authority would be, shit, I don't care a stuff what you say, Christopher, or what the Tibetan Lama says. This is important and beneficial for me, and I'm going to stay with it. That's authority.
That's what I've tried to do this summer when I went back to Nepal and India. Yeah. After years I haven't been there. But it was a bit devastating for me to realize that something in me changed.
All right.
And I'm not this fully religious, devoted Buddhist that I used to be. So I wasn't sure that
good.
I can really put the ropes now.
No, all right.
Yeah, but I feel my life are extremely meaningless.
No, slowly,
all the
slowly.
All support
no,
that I had from the spiritual community.
Slowly, 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 your voice is, you're running wild.
Stop.
Your voice is running into agitation and anxiety, and I've lost, and feeling sorry for oneself.
And I can't be angry at my Tibetan master, and I'm not allowed to express these feelings also.
Oh, yes, you can.
Yes.
If a Tibetan master can't handle anger, then he should disrobe and be working computers.
He can, but the community, my other Sangha members will stop me to death if there is no way to feel about it.
All right, slowly. Sometimes, regardless of Tibetan masters or anybody else, for some people, in this hall, because I know personally, who have had a period of time in which there's been a really close, affectionate, committed connection with Buddhism, or Judaism, Buddhism in this case, there. And there's come a point in her or his life when one says, this is just not for me. They didn't have any authority from outside, just this is not for me. And when a person has come to that, and you may have come to that with the trip to Nepal, then that starts to raise other kinds of questions.
Yes.
I agree. It does raise some insecurity, some feeling of uncertainty and transition. You've got to be patient with that. If something is not working for you, and you don't want just to rush back into lots of different things, because that would be an escape there, nor rush back to, what you say, materialism or career, then it's going to take quite a lot of work to and listening inwardly, listening to the wise voices, in order to say, okay, what is important? Liberation is important. Love is important there. Insights into life is important. Letting go is important there. Vision is important. What will contribute to all of that? So, though it's difficult when something is no longer working, called Buddhism, let us say, nevertheless, there's plenty of opportunity for an awakened life without Buddhism. But you may use it, like coming here, you could say it's the Buddhist tradition, if you wish. You make good use of the Sangha and the resources there. Because if you don't, you'll be complaining to yourself. You'll feel unhappy, you'll feel confused there, and you'll feel sorry for yourself. And then you're really stuck.
I mean, what I really love about Tavana that is there is some intense of tradition, but also there's a lot of openness and spaciousness for many other stuff.
Yeah.
It's not very, dogmatic.
No.
It enables many kinds of. But I feel sometimes, really still lonely and lost, and without the support of a spiritual community.
So you do slowly. Go back into this self-pity. You've just said something important, and then you've just completely rejected it. You said, Tovana is wonderful because it's not dogmatic, it is open, it's true, it is tolerant, and there is a very loving Sangha here in this community. And the next sentence, oh, I have no Sangha, I have this, I have that. Whoa, wait a minute. So, keep, if it's hard for oneself, the whole purpose, Sangang Saranang Gacchami, I take refuge, I make commitment to the Sangha. You listen, you spend time with the Sangha. It's an open, tolerant, and it encourages people to explore other teachings and other practices. Tovana is a Sangha without walls. It's a foundation, it's a basis of everything that Tovana does. And that, I think, is worthy of trust. It is worthy of confidence. Hang out with them. Some good people around in this hall. Just hang out with them so you forget your mind.
Well, I basically am, but with a big capital V. I still cherish my Tibetan tradition very much, and the profundity there, it's not always easy.
It's really the duality. I go to Tibet, I really feel I'm not really connected with it anymore. And then a few sentences later, the opposite view comes. So,
well, not with the Tibetan tradition, but with the teachings, yes.
Slowly, slowly, slowly. There are two of us sitting here. In the connection there, your love and appreciation for the Tibetan tradition. It is precious and it is important. And genuinely can be supportive. There is no but. There's no problem in connecting with Tovana, connection with the Sangha. And if you wish, listening to a Tibetan master, doing a retreat, there's no problem with it. Don't make a problem when there isn't one. Have the freedom to go back to Nepal. Have the freedom to do more retreats with Tovana. Feel the liberation of the being to explore. There's no problem in it. Don't make a problem where there isn't one. What was the one line right?
Take the problem out of life.
Exactly.
Your line.
Whoever said that said a good thing. Take the problem out of life. Take the problem out of it. Okay, thank you. We just have a quiet minute and I give a short reflection. There's the rhythm and flows of our daily life. And of course the ups and downs and the challenges and the difficulties that take place. The preciousness of life can be confirmed in the very small event. The preciousness of life can be confirmed in the very small event. And when our heart is receptive and connected, the small event stands out for us. And that small event can provide a tremendous amount of insight, wisdom, and understanding about our relationship to life, just from the small event. The person has a sensation in the thigh muscle of the leg. in the whole scheme of things, it's a small event. Even in the body, it's a small event. And there's some wish to understand that, which is valuable of itself. There's a little questioning of that. And though it may not seem obvious, and it may not be, the relationship to food arises. So from the small event, it then sparks an interest in something else. This is how we grow and develop. And in that, the relationship of food is one which the content, what? The manner of the eating there, the care and the respect for it, the willingness to take our time and eat and chew the food well, and the whole relationship to food, that small event becomes a symbolic fact, but a symbolic statement of a healthy relationship to many other events. Can I make the time in life to really listen to another? Can I take the time in life to really listen to a piece of music and listen to it so well and really listen to it so I really absorb it? Can I take the time to really look at a flower and see the flower and the plant and its connection with the earth and the light and the water and the soil, etc.? So the small event becomes the intimacy with, and also a reminder, life constitutes, and it always has done, a successive sequence of small events. Our life is very small. Only have to look up at the night sky just to get a little perspective on our life. So this sequence of life moving through the small event, and out of that, as we heard from the good person who came up initially, there, something's touched, and then this is worth giving more interest in, the relationship to food. If we don't develop the qualities that we discussed together, the consumption that's going on, the waste of food that's going on, the unhealthy food that's being produced will continue, and there's going to be terrible costs for our children, our grandchildren and future generations. We have to find a wise, clear, nutritious diet and way of eating out of respect for life. And that needs to be part of our daily life priority. So that not only is the stomach fed, but the heart is fed. We feel nourished. We feel balanced. We have space in our stomach for the food to digest. And all of that is part of a wise response there. So the one might ask, then how can I put that similar attitude and relationship into other things? Similarly, in the good voice of the lady there, the thought runs, and sometimes the future is wanting to have the answers for the future. What do we do when we leave here? A common thought. We don't even know what we're doing when we're here, let alone what might happen in the future. So the reconnection and the re-establishing of ourself clearly takes trust. Clearly. Can I get well established in the present enough so the future is essentially small things which need to be done? The future is a vision or an application to put into tomorrow or next week. And therefore, really mindful of, is my thought about the future actually, in that vast open space of the future, actually a habit, or is it I am not really connected with life? I've just got disconnected from it. The immediacy, the sensation of it, the vibration of it, and our deep ongoing interest in life, the immediacy of life, so that our relationship to the future is a relationship in connection with the present. And sometimes, rather than the speculation, sometimes we might just ask, will there be any instructions on the final day? Oh, yes, there will be. And we'll spell those out as well. And when we come to these situations in our life of working with our experiences, just from the very first point, person said, I had fear, last person, to leave there and to walk here. Actually, in Dharma language, if the fear had substance to it, the person would not have been able to leave the spot. So sometimes, for us, the sensation arises, unpleasant, some agitation there. And if it holds back, if there's enough strength in it to hold back, at that point it's called fear. Fear of talking to a large group of people, as the good lady said. The sensation can be there, it can seem quite strong, the thought is, oh, I can't speak in front of a group of people or whatever, but nevertheless, the action takes place. The action is fearless. The action is greater than the fear. And the confirmation of it, the good lady, she walked from there to here. So the fearlessness was walked through. It wasn't identified with. It wasn't believed in. It wasn't given power. Because if it had, we wouldn't have had the conversation. That, when it comes to these issues, to repeat, it's a ruthless teaching. Teaching is not meant to make people's lives comfortable. It's not about that. We've got enough people trying to make our life comfortable, and it's a nightmare. So, we want to be with the truth of what the experience is. And, as we know, relationships are vulnerable. The relationship with the Tibetan tradition, with the Vipassana world, with the partner, with the neighbors, with the job. We're constantly being cut off from what we love and connected with, not just in religious life, it's happening constantly. And human beings have got to wake up to the fact that when we extend ourselves to others, which is precious and valuable, there's good ethic there, it's vulnerable. The other person may say, get out of here. Like the Tibetan Lama or the teacher or whatever. One never knows what the response of the other may be. But nevertheless, there's an interest. There's a wish to take steps, to learn, to discover. And we have to trust in that while knowing it could come to an end at any time. And that applies to work, and relationships, and money, and many, many things. We take the steps, we reach out, but at least know there are no guarantees. Life is not a picnic. And the realism of that, in an odd sort of way, is quite liberating. I find it's quite, this is how it is. Can I deal with it the way it is? And that in the closing of one door, Tibetan Lama or whatever it might be about, the closing of one door, the exploration of that will, an acknowledgement will keep the heart open to the opening of a fresh door. That's life. Sometimes we've been in situations and the door is closed on us. And the wisdom has come later, said, that's the best thing that ever happened to me. It was a horror show at the time, but later on I think, God, thank God I'm out of it. You know what I'm talking about. So So the explanation is to free the being up. It's a liberating movement while being with the truth of experience of life. Okay, thanks for listening. Thank you.